Is a lecture given by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, 24th Chapter, Text Number 31, recorded on the 30th of March 2015 in Los Angeles.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 24, Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation, Text 31. Shri Shuka Vacha Iti Bruvanam Nirpatim Jagat Pati Satchavratam Matchavapur Yugat Shay Vahartu Kama Prayana Vebravich Chikir Shay Kanta Janap Priyap Priyam. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, when King Satchavrata spoke in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who at the end of the yuga had assumed the form of a fish to benefit his devotee and enjoy his pastimes in the water of inundation, responded as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, who can subdue your enemies, on the seventh day from today, the three worlds, Bhu, Bhuva, and Swa, will all merge into the water of inundation. When all the three worlds merge into the water, a large boat sent by me will appear before you. Thereafter, O King, you shall collect all types of herbs and seeds and load them on that great boat. Then, accompanied by the seven rishis and surrounded by all kinds of living entities, you shall get aboard that boat, and without moroseness, you shall easily travel with your companions on the ocean of inundation, the only illumination being the effulgence of the great rishis. Then, as the boat is tossed about by the powerful winds, attach the vessel to my horn by means of the great serpent Vasuki, for I shall be present by your side. Pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it, O King, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Lord Brahma's slumber is over. Purport. This particular devastation actually took place, not during the night of Lord Brahma, but during his day. For it was during the time of Chakshusha Manu. Brahma's night takes place when Brahma goes to sleep. But in the daytime, there are 14 Manus, one of whom is Chakshusha Manu. Therefore, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that although it is daytime for Lord Brahma, Brahma felt sleepy for a short time by the supreme will of the Lord. This short period is regarded as Lord Brahma's night. This has been elaborately discussed by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita. The following is a summary of his analysis. Because Agastya Muni cursed Swayambhuva Manu, during the time of Swayambhuva Manu, a devastation took place. This devastation is mentioned in the Matsya Purana. During the time of Chakshusha Manu, by the supreme will of the Lord, there was suddenly another pralaya or devastation. This is mentioned by Markandeya Rishi in the Vishnu Dharmottara. At the end of Manu's time, there is not necessarily a devastation. But at the end of the Chakshusha Manvatara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his illusory energy, wanted to show Satchavrata the effects of devastation. Srila Sridhar Swami also agrees with this opinion. The Laghu Bhagavatamrita says, and you have several Sanskrit verses, but not the translation. Om Agana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gudave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The science of the avatars is very intricate. Krishna is unlimited. His incarnations are unlimited. And the details about those incarnations are also unlimited. The Lagu Bhagavatamrita is mentioned here. The work by Rupa Goswami. That's due to be published in BBT edition later this year. And there you'll see all these avatar intricacies elaborated upon. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Deva Tiryan Naradishu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears as a demigod, as a human being, even in animal forms. And just like you can't count all the waves in the ocean, similarly you cannot count all the avatars. Sometimes people ask, would you Krishna devotees be open to an avatar appearing that's not mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam? If you're truly non-sectarian, you should be open to whatever God can do. And so, suppose some extraordinary personality appears and gives teachings. Would you be open to that if you're truly non-sectarian, if you're truly lovers of the Supreme Absolute Truth? What would you say to that? Or, in other words, the implication is, are you just closed-minded and you have a fixed set of avatars that you'll accept, and anything outside that fixed set you will not acknowledge? But the Shastra explains that human beings are only authorized to accept the avatars listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. That doesn't mean there are not other avatars. As Bhagavatam explains and Prabhupada elaborates in the purports in the first canto, there are unlimited avatars in every species of life. Sometimes they always get a bit whimsical and ask, what about the tomato avatar? Or still, the fact is, in every species of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in a form and with a mission suitable for that particular species. The idea that God has created the universe and then abandoned it is totally refuted by Srimad Bhagavatam. As Krishna says himself in Bhagavad Gita, he comes regularly because otherwise all the worlds could be ruined, because if he did not take a personal interest in rectifying the situations. Every species of life, there is an avatar. But to spare us from confusion, to spare us from being deceived, human beings are authorized only to accept the incarnations listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. And in that way, because Shastra is the proof, we're spared from unnecessary speculation. This is not being closed-minded. This is being very practical. This is acknowledging the limited and imperfect senses of the human being. And this stance also acknowledges our dependency on Shastra. We may use so much logic and reason in our presentations, but the ultimate proof is not the analogy. It's not the logic. It's what's stated in the Shastra. We're not ashamed to be Shastra-bound. It may appear that we're restricted by relying simply on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. We're not open to whatever. Especially in California, but not only California, but other parts of the world. You've got to show you're open. As soon as you restrict yourself, that means you're not really spiritual. You've got to be open to anything and everything without. And if you're really a Paramahansa, you make no judgments, no discrimination, no distinction. Anything is as good as anything else, then you're really spiritual. And of course, the usual mantra, all paths lead to the same place. So why have you chosen to exclusively focus on the Krishna path as if it's going to take you somewhere that other paths cannot take you? If you're truly spiritual, if you're truly open-minded, broad-minded, then you'll realize that all these paths are just different portals leading to the same place. And therefore, there's no point in you focusing on the Krishna path. You could choose any path. You will get to the same place. Have no fear. Have no doubt. Well, first of all, what is that same place? Tell us what that is first. Then we might agree that all the paths get there. But if you can't tell us what that place is, what the destination is, then why should we listen to you about how all the paths lead to that unknown place? And, as I may have explained before, this notion that all paths lead to the same place implies that the person who said that has some superior vantage point. He's like up in a helicopter, and he can see all the roads converging on the same destination. But who has that vantage point? Who actually has the factual vision and experience of how all the paths lead to the same place? No one knows what that same place is, and they've never seen all the roads converging on that place. But they'll play with your mind and say things like that. If you're really spiritual, if you're really open, you'll understand all the roads lead to the same place. And you'll understand that Bhagavatam is a nice book full of inspiring myths that motivate you to develop your human qualities. In the past, myth had a negative connotation, in the 50s, maybe the 60s. And anything considered myth was deemed inferior. But now humanity has progressed. Humanity has become more open. And we understand that myth has so much instructive value. So often you can meet persons who say, especially university professors, we appreciate the bhakti myths. We're open. Matsya? Sure. Obviously a myth. I mean, fish incarnation? Really? Do you really accept that? But there's a lesson in this mythology buried deep within the symbols. Buried deep within the pageantry of the various incarnations is a message for our growth. And so we're open to that. And we appreciate you Krishna people and your myths because you add color to human society. That's considered the progressive way of considering the subject matter of the avatars. Myths are positive. I like to point out that think of Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Pritchard Maharaj and all the assembled sages from various parts of the universe. They had gathered on the bank of the Ganga to witness Shukadeva Goswami delivering Srimad Bhagavatam. And in that deliverance of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami explained the coming Kali Yuga. He explained the characteristics of human beings in the age of darkness. How persons wouldn't take a bath, how they would feel so proud because of their long hair, how men and women would live together simply based on sexual attraction with no lasting marriage commitment, how a man would be considered expert, superlatively expert, if he could maintain one wife and two kids. So, you can consider, perhaps, how the sages, they could be so astonished at hearing about such degradation. Consider their response could be, this is myth. How could human beings sink so low? But, of course, we're living amongst it. What is myth depends on your perspective. If, because the activities of the avatars of the Lord are so inconceivable to one's tiny brain, why do you automatically categorize it as myth just because your tiny brain can't accommodate it? You could easily flip the situation over and say that human beings would ever live as they're living now? That's got to be myth. How could humanity sink so low? How can human society live in the presence of nuclear weapons that are more than 1,000 times more powerful than the nuclear bombs that dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? How can a human society live with all that? 1,000 times more powerful than a nuclear bomb that finished off a whole city? And we're talking about peace and prosperity and... The subject matter of the Lord's form is very important because unless you accept that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can take many forms, yet those forms are all spiritual, you can be fooled into thinking that these are just various human projections. Human beings know about fish, so why not a fish avatar? Human beings notice they know about tortoises, why not a tortoise avatar? Psychologists will say that these are just projections of your mind. They're remnants of when human beings worship nature, thinking that there is personality behind various parts of nature. So now human beings are projecting that there is a fish god or a tortoise god. If the Supreme Personality of God and Supreme Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, everything is there. How can we restrict the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saying you can't do this, you can't do that? How can we fence in the inconceivable abilities of the Supreme Absolute Truth? With our tiny brains, we try to fence the Supreme Lord in. You can't do this, you can't do that. First of all, one has to establish that the Supreme Personality of God can actually come to this world. Many people will say, if there is God, he can't come here. Or if there's God, why would he want to come here? Who would want to come to this place? Or he shouldn't come here and bother us and interfere with us. We give praise and thanks to God to keep him away. We don't want him here in the midst of our enjoyment, in the midst of our power and control. So first, Bhagavad Gita establishes that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can come. He explains himself. Not only that he can come, but also what is his main mission. And then Krishna describes the mechanism, so to speak, the technology, the spiritual technology by which he appears. He says, Ajopisan Avyatma Bhutanam Ishvaropisan. First of all, I'm unborn. Of course, every living entity is actually unborn in that we're not the body. Krishna establishes, Aja, I'm unborn, and Avyatma, I have a form, though, even though I'm unborn, and that form is inexhaustible. Our forms are not inexhaustible, our material bodies. The third thing, Krishna points out, Bhutanam Ishvaropisan. I'm the Lord of all conscious entities. Nevertheless, I still can come. Even though I have these supreme characteristics and abilities, I can still come to the material world. But how do I come? Sambhavami Atmamaya. I come my own way through my spiritual potency. In this way, Bhagavad Gita establishes that the personality, Krishna, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not an ordinary person. And you can't say, if there is God, what's he doing on the battlefield? Krishna can do whatever he likes. And he states his mission. He even gives a schedule for his appearances. Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Aharya Brahmanovi. He gives the schedule. At the same time, we should know, Krishna is not restricted to any schedule. But just so that human beings will not speculate and that they'll be able to rely on Shastra, there's a schedule given for the appearances of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the second canto of Bhagavatam, Pritchard Maharaj was concerned that people would be confused about the Lord's accepting so many different forms. So he pointed out that, couldn't it be said, he's questioning Shukadeva Goswami, couldn't it be said that just like a living entity assumes a material body, similarly the Lord also assumes a body according to nature, material nature? Even if that body is gigantic, like Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the elephant has a body that's huge, an ant has a body that's tiny. So couldn't there be, in other words, a material process that the Lord assumes a gigantic body according to some particular material need? So in this way, Pritchard Maharaj is clearing the way for us to distinguish between the mere accepting bodies of different sizes and what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's pointing you in the direction of the difference in the quality of the bodies. In other words, he's not simply saying that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Bhagavan because he has a big body. That's actually not the ultimate criterion. The defining criterion is, what's the quality of that body? And now we have Matsyavatar. Again, the same issues will be raised in the beginning of this chapter. What is the Supreme Personality of Godhead taking such an abominable form as a fish? On the Vedic scale of the development of consciousness and the various superiorities and inferiorities of bodies, fish rank the lowest. Jalaja Lavanakshani. Lower than plants. Fish, from the Vedic analysis, are considered less conscious than plants. They're the lowest. Yet the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes as Matsya, the fish incarnation. So Pritchard Maharaj wants to clarify, because here we see the Lord changing bodies, assuming different forms. Well, doesn't the living entity do that in the cycle of samsara, repeated birth and death? Not only does it seem the Lord is changing forms in a way that conditioned souls do, but also this particular form is known to be abominable and the lowest. So how can all this be done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any material contamination? This is the point that Prichard Maharaj once explored. He's bringing this up to Shukadeva Goswami. For Shukadeva Goswami to describe how no matter what kind of body the Supreme Lord takes, there's never any contact with the material energy. There's never any taking on of material qualities. There are never any material activities. This is the astonishing significance of the Matsya avatar. In ordinarily what's considered such a lowly body, the lowest body, you have the pastimes, the lila of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And why? Why would the Supreme Personality of Godhead assume the form of a fish? If he is the supreme enjoyer, why not let God enjoy as a fish? People go to the ocean to sport, but they have to always be worried about their breathing. It's not their natural place, although they like bathing in the ocean and surfing and playing in the waves. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can take the form of a fish for his own pleasure. And also for the safety and protection of his dear devotees. The verse we first read said, Jana Priya Priyam. He assumed the form of a fish to benefit his devotee. That is no material purpose. Shukadeva Goswami elaborates that for the purpose of the devotee, for the purpose of protecting Dharma, for the purpose of protecting proper lifestyles that lead to Dharma, for all these reasons, for the protection of the cows, the brahmanas, the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. Yet, he's not working. He's not doing some kind of chores or tasks in the ordinary sense. He's always enjoying. So therefore, when you hear about Matsya Avatar, you're hearing about the Supreme Lord's enjoyment. Swimming through the waters of inundation. What is normally the most frightening scene, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoying. So why should we restrict the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with our tiny brains, with our tiny speculations? The science of the avatars is the real subject matter for a human civilization to focus on. Avatar Katha talks about the avatars. These talks will purify the human being and human society from their intense contamination by the modes of material nature. Srila Prabhupada was once describing how an ideal human civilization should be. He was describing a rural situation in India where the villagers would work in the fields during the day, and then when the field work was over, they would walk towards a place where Hari Katha, Avatar Katha, was being discussed by the local sadhus. And then when the talks were over in the late evening, the people would walk back to their houses. And as they're walking back to their houses, they would be reciting and going over all the katha that they heard about the Lord and his incarnations. They get home after talking about it on the way, and they get home and take rest, and then they would simply dream about the talks of Krishna, the talks of the avatars. So Srila Prabhupada explained, this is real human civilization. Of course, what would our response be? What, no television? No internet? They get home and there's no internet, no email? They have no smartphones? No movies, no DVDs? The civilization is evaluated not in terms of its technological intricacy, but in terms of its focus on the science of the Supreme, Bhagavad Dharma. And this is what Bhagavatam is gradually changing us to understand. By daily hearing Bhagavatam, your standards for evaluating civilization change completely. As more and more you enter into the subject matter and you understand Matsya, fish body, is not mythological. This is the pleasure form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's solving a particular situation with enjoyment. He wanted to show his devotee what it's like in an inundation, in a devastation. And he also wanted to enjoy sporting in the water. Once we accept the enjoyment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate principle of existence, then everything becomes clear. It's not that God has to work. It's not that he has to do things. He himself says this in Bhagavad Gita. I've got nothing to... I have no fruits I need to get. I have no goals I need to achieve. But still I come to this world and still I act for his pleasure. And at the same time, while he is enjoying, he takes care of his devotees and he uplifts human society. This is the real science of God. It is not sectarian. It is not narrow and restricted. By our reliance on Shastra, we can actually understand things that are beyond the senses. In other words, the Shastra is not restricting your sense perception. It is the portal through which your sense perception expands. You can understand the glories of the spirit soul. You can understand the glories of the Supreme Soul. You can understand the form, qualities, and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And most importantly, you can understand that there's no qualitative difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead's name, form, qualities, pastimes. Therefore, hearing about Krishna's activities is the same as seeing Krishna. It's the same as associating with Krishna. Hearing his name is the same as seeing him, as associating with him. This is the rarest status in life. To have factual knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and appreciation for his inconceivable activities in terms of his own enjoyment and in terms of taking care of his dear devotees. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.